Hi friends, I am your host Jade, and welcome or welcome back to Criminal Curiosity, the true crime podcast that dives into bizarre and fascinating cases. Together, we talk about everything in the true crime world, whether you've heard of them or not. So buckle up and get ready to feed your curiosity with Criminal Curiosity. This week, we are talking about the disturbing murder of Oliver Northup and Claudia Maupin. So let's get started. Oliver Northup Jr. was born on April 26, 1925, in Grand Island, Nebraska. He also went by the name Chip. In World War II, Oliver served in the Navy. He also attended UCLA before enrolling at the UC Berkeley School of Law, where he graduated with a law degree. Oliver enjoyed both writing and classical musicals. Oliver loved music, and he played in the band at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis, which is a local church in Davis, California. Claudia Maupin was born on May 15, 1936, and according to her daughter, she describes her mother as a spiritual traveler who was looking into various religions to determine which one best suits her. After learning about the Unitarian Church, Claudia even told her daughter, quote, "My husband is at the Unitarian Church," end quote. Claudia joined the David Unitarian Church as a pastoral associate and was actively involved in her community's theater. In 1996, Claudia married Oliver. Oliver had six children total, including two stepchildren from a previous marriage, and Claudia had three children from a previous marriage. Together, they had 11 children, as well as 14 grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren. In 2013, Claudia and Oliver celebrated their 17th year of marriage. They resided in a condo in Davis, California, which is located in Yolo County. Daniel William Marsh was born on May 14, 1997. And in 2008, when he was 10 years old, he was recognized for the one good deed that he did in his life, which is when he performed CPR on his father, who was having a heart attack, and he saved his life. Additionally, he received the American Red Cross Heroes Award. Daniel's mother had an affair with his former kindergarten teacher, which led his parents getting a divorce the same year. At this point, Daniel started to have violent thoughts, specifically towards the woman his mother was having an affair with. He wanted to kill her by slitting her throat or strangling her. He was always dreaming of killing people, pretty much at this point. He began sharing his fantasies of torturing people with his therapist when he was 11 years old, the following year. After that, Daniel was given the diagnosis of adjustment disorder with a depressed mood. According to Medline Plus, adjustment disorder is a group of symptoms such as stress and feeling sad or hopeless, and this occurs when you go through a stressful life event. That's what he was diagnosed with because he thought about killing people. Adjustment disorder. In the seventh grade, Daniel began making plans to physically hurt other people. He began consulting with clinical social worker David Bessa in 2010. In August 2010, he was prescribed with Prozac, an antidepressant. Daniel started using alcohol and marijuana when he was a teenager, and he was bouncing back and forth between living with his parents. Daniel's father kicked him out when he was 14 because he was constantly drunk or he was always smoking. Then he made the decision to move in with his mother. Daniel developed anorexia in October 2011, and the following month he was admitted to an outpatient program for treatment. Daniel was admitted to the Berkeley Hospital on December 29, 2011, where he underwent treatment for an eating disorder until January 25, 2012. He was initially prescribed Celexa, which was then later switched to Lexapro, and then he went back on Prozac. And additionally, with all those medications, he began taking antipsychotic medication. Daniel's ideas grew worse and more frequent as time passed. The police were called in to talk to Daniel after he admitted to having dreams about killing people to a school counselor in December 2012. Daniel was then unwillingly admitted to the hospital because he posed a risk to himself and to other people. Daniel's medicine was, again, changed, so he was now taking Zoloft, then he was taking Seroquel, and by 2013, he began taking Wellbutrin. Daniel revealed to the school psychologist in January 2013 that he intended to murder his classmates, stating, quote, "I have full confidence that I could hurt these people," end quote. When a police officer was brought in, it was determined that he posed no danger to himself or to other people. Daniel was now speaking with a different school counselor, and Daniel started saying that he wanted to torture people by cutting off their eyelids and removing the flesh from their hands. So it's very clear that things were getting worse. Daniel said that he was only beginning to explore the depths of his fantasy. Since they felt that Daniel wasn't a threat to anyone, the school counselor decided not to tell authorities about this. He admitted that his ideas were getting worse, and he now considered killing everybody that he just so happened to look at. Daniel added that he had fantasies about, he even took an interest in serial killers like Ted Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer. Daniel then began discussing his desire to torture and murder random people with his friends. He started drawing extremely violent pictures in art class. Daniel's friends stated that Daniel would often talk about killing people and said that if he was ever caught for murder, he would claim insanity. Daniel also had a written plan for how he was going to kill his girlfriend's ex-boyfriend. Daniel started viewing gore porn in 2012. I didn't look this up because I don't want to be traumatized, but you can combine the terms and come up with your own definition of what gore porn is. Additionally, Daniel started setting fire to things and hurting animals. He once randomly strangled a cat, and when his friend asked him, "Why'd you kill the cat?" Daniel said, quote, "Well, I just wanted to. I just hated that cat," end quote. Daniel even asked his friend if he could kill his dog. Robert, Oliver's son, went to check on them, but thought that maybe they just left town. Maybe they went on vacation. Laura, Claudia's daughter, went with the police to check on the couple's home later in the evening, when they still hadn't heard from Claudia or Oliver. When Laura rang the doorbell, there was no response. She and the officers went around to the back of the house, where they discovered an open window with the screen slashed. When they used their flashlights to check inside the house, they discovered bloodstains and the bodies of 87-year-old Oliver Northup and 76-year-old Claudia Maupin. Together, they had been stabbed 128 times and their bodies had been severely mutilated. Claudia had a phone in her abdomen, while Oliver had a drinking glass in his abdomen. Along with the county officers, 25 FBI agents were involved in the investigation. Nothing of value was taken from the couple. There was no physical evidence, no DNA, no fingerprints, no footprints were found at the scene, and investigators were really sure of where to start. They didn't know if they were dealing with one or two murderers. Once it was discovered that Oliver's grandson, Tony, had schizophrenia, he was treated as a suspect, and Oliver's son and grandson were interrogated for 12 hours. Police searched Robert's home and discovered that the carpet was freshly steam cleaned. And Robert stated that, of course, it doesn't look good. His dad has just been murdered, and here he has freshly cleaned carpet, but he stated that it was just bad timing. They discovered a drawing made by Tony, Robert's son, which showed a man standing over two children with a knife in their bedroom. Tony felt hounded after the police eventually dropped him as a suspect, because either way, people are still going to look at you and treat you as a suspect because people have their own beliefs. And even though he was cleared, many people thought that he wasn't innocent. And it just got to him. And 3 years after the killings, on October 13th, 2016, he committed suicide. Daniel went to school on April 14th and started telling his closest friends that he had killed two people. He made a second confession to his friends on April 15th during lunch. Daniel asked his girlfriend, you know, whether she had heard about the murders that happened, and when she said no, that she hadn't heard about the murders, Daniel took this opportunity to recount what had happened in great detail and express his thoughts on the murder. She initially didn't believe him because who wants to believe that their 15-year-old boyfriend just killed two people? Daniel continued to describe the murder to his friend the following day in great detail and again described how killing the victims made him feel. On April 16th, Daniel's friend asked about the murders, and I think this was done to verify his account of events, make sure that he actually really is telling the truth. Daniel stated that committing the crimes was the best feeling in his life. He then went on to show his friend the knife used in the murder, as well as the gloves, ski cap, boots, and jacket that were all worn during the murders. Together, Daniel's friend and Daniel's girlfriend discuss what to do with what Daniel told them. They kept his confession a secret from the police because they feared that Daniel could possibly kill them if he found out. When Daniel's friend learned that he was carrying a knife around campus, he reported it and Daniel was suspended. On June 4th, Daniel's girlfriend ended their relationship because she felt intimidated by him. A week or so after the breakup, Daniel broke into her home using the dog door at around midnight, leaving his ex-girlfriend terrified. I don't know why he thought that would maybe make them think that she was getting back together with him. That was never going to happen. She then told Daniel's friend what had happened, and after deciding that something needed to be done because things were getting out of hand, they told Daniel's father about the murders. However, his father refused to believe them. That's when they decided to inform the police about Daniel's confession. A high school resource officer took Daniel in for questioning on June 17th. Errol Pineda, a Davis County investigator, and Chris Campion, an FBI special agent, then began questioning him. Daniel, all this time, had been boasting about the murders to his friends for months, but suddenly he was denying it all. He was crying and pleading with the police to believe him because he was just a kid. Daniel started to confess after 3 hours and 38 minutes of questioning. On the evening of April 13th, 2013, Daniel claimed that he had, quote, had enough of his violent urges and that he needed to let them out. Daniel explained that he had taped the soles of his shoes to prevent him from leaving any footprints and that he wore gloves to prevent DNA or fingerprints from being left behind. In addition to a black ski mask and an all-black outfit, Daniel was also carrying a 6-inch buck knife. He left his mother's house on April 14th between 2 to 3 a.m. and started wandering the neighborhood in search of homes with open windows and open doors. After searching about 40 to 50 homes, the home of Claudia and Oliver had an open window. Daniel's father lived just 2 doors down from the couple's home. Daniel cut the window screen and entered through it. He waited in the living room until he heard snoring, at which point he realized that they were sound asleep. He entered the bedroom and remained there for 10 minutes, where he was watching the couple as he stood over their bed. Daniel stated that at this moment he felt nervous but excited and exhilarated. Later, when Claudia woke up, she saw Daniel standing over her and started screaming. At that point, Daniel started stabbing Claudia in the torso as Claudia screamed for him to stop. Daniel claimed that even though she was crying and pleading with him, it motivated him to keep going. Oliver woke up and Daniel just stabbed him until he died. Daniel admitted to the police that he kept stabbing the victims until they died because, quote, it just felt right, end quote. Claudia Maupin suffered 74 wounds to her body, 67 of those were stab wounds, and one of those stab wounds knocked out her tooth, all the way to his legs. Daniel then began mutilating their bodies. He began to cut their bodies open and disembowel them. The first responders on the scene stated that their organs were removed from their bodies. Daniel claimed that he tried to take out Claudia's eye with the knife, but it was too difficult for him. And out of curiosity, he also cut open Oliver's forehead. Daniel then put a phone inside Claudia's abdomen and a drinking glass in Oliver's abdomen. Daniel admitted to the police that he did it to mess with the investigators who would eventually look into the murders. Daniel claimed that after carrying out the murders, he felt the happiest that he's ever been. He claimed that the sensation was the strongest while the victims were awake and resisting. Daniel also told authorities that the sensation he was having was far superior to sex and that this feeling stayed with him. Daniel admitted that he intended to kill more people that night. He went to the streets after the murder and began to wander around, hoping to find another house with an open window or an open door so that he could kill someone. In order to give the impression that the deaths were unrelated, Daniel said that he was going to use a baseball bat this time rather than a knife. Daniel stated during the interrogation, quote, "I don't feel sympathy for other people at all. Don't feel empathy for them," end quote. After Daniel's confession was over, the FBI special agent asked Daniel, quote, "You mentioned that pretty much everybody you meet, you have thoughts about killing them and how you would kill them. So, how would you kill me?" End quote. Daniel told the FBI agent, quote, "Just a lot of ways. Choking you to death with your tie, beating your face into the mirror until it broke, and using the glass to cut your arteries. Gouging your eyes out and just smashing your face into the wall. Nothing personal," end quote. And to finish off everything, Daniel told the investigators that all the evidence you need is in his mother's garage. When investigators visited his mother's home, they discovered the bloody clothes and the murder weapon in the garage. Daniel Marsh was charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder with special enhancements for intentionally killing more than one person, showing depravity in the crimes, lying in wait to kill the victims, which basically means waiting and hiding for the right moment to kill someone, and inflicting torture during the murders. And Daniel pleaded not guilty. He then followed through on his plan that he had already discussed with his friends, and he changed his plea from not guilty to not guilty by reason of insanity. Matthew Solier, a psychiatrist who evaluated him, reported that Daniel had threatened to kill him. Daniel was determined by Matthew Solier to be mentally ill but sane, which was all that the defense required to use the insanity defense. Daniel's attorney filed a motion to suppress his confession on June 17, 2013, claiming that the interrogation had started under false pretenses and that Daniel had repeatedly expressed a desire to go home. The defense claimed that the prosecution had failed to prove that Daniel made his confession voluntarily after being informed of his Miranda rights and making that decision to confess. But the judge denied the request to suppress. On September 2, 2014, Daniel Marsh's trial got underway. He was now 17 and being tried as an adult. According to Daniel's defense, the multiple medications that he was taking to treat his mental illness caused him to exhibit uncontrollable violence and render him insane. Mind you, he was having these dark thoughts way before he was taking the medication. Daniel was accused of planning and carefully carrying out these murders. According to the prosecution, Daniel was crafty and manipulative. Numerous people testified during the trial, including detectives, a forensic pathologist, Daniel's friends, his ex-girlfriend, the psychiatrist who treated him, and the therapist. After 2 hours of deliberation, the jury reached a verdict on September 26, 2014. Guilty on 2 counts of first-degree murder and all the special enhancements. A few days later, the jury determined that Daniel was perfectly sane at the time of the murders. Although Daniel was tried as an adult, he was not eligible for the death penalty or life in prison without the possibility of parole because he was 17 years old. Therefore, the maximum sentence that Daniel could face was 52 years to life in prison. Daniel's defense argued that he should be sentenced to 25 years to life. The maximum sentence they claimed was a cruel punishment for a child, as in the child that murdered two people in their homes, disemboweled them, mutilated them, and stabbed them combined a total of 128 times. Yeah, that's the child that they're talking about. The prosecutors argued for the maximum sentence, saying, quote, "This case screams out for 52 years to life. Nothing else would be appropriate." The prosecutor also stated that in his 28 years as a prosecutor, he, quote, "has never seen such a heinous and reprehensible act. Never have I ever seen a defendant with such an evil soul," end quote. Daniel was given a sentence of 52 years to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 52 years. For each murder charge against Daniel, he was given 25 years and an additional 2 years for the special enhancements. The judge said during Daniel's sentencing that Daniel was proud of his crime and that the murders were carefully planned. There are more legalities in this case, but despite having a 52-year-to-life sentence, Daniel is eligible for parole in California after 25 years, so when he's 42 years old. This is because of the Senate Bill 260, which was approved by the California state legislation in 2013, which is called the Youth Offender Parole Hearing. This is a law for criminals who have committed a crime when they were a juvenile. If the sentence for the prisoner is less than 25 years to life, they are eligible for release or a parole hearing during their 20th year of incarceration. And if their sentence is 25 to life or greater, they are eligible for parole or release after 25 years in prison. And there was a lot of back and forth with this case because Daniel was a juvenile when he committed these heinous crimes, and they were just going back and forth of whether or not he should be treated like an adult or whether he should be treated like a juvenile. Daniel Marsh is now 26 years old and in prison at the Richard J. Donovan Correctional Facility in San Diego, serving a 52-year-to-life sentence for the murders. To make sure that we're all on the same page with the sentencing, the judge sentenced him to 52 years to life, but because he was a juvenile at the time of the crime and because of the California law, he will be eligible for parole during his 25th year of incarceration. Victoria, the oldest daughter of Claudia Maupin, described her mother during the sentencing hearing. Quote, "She lived her life loving people, always willing to lend a hand, a shoulder, or an ear. If she were here, she would help us survive this, but she's not here because Daniel Marsh killed my mother for his own perverse gratification," end quote. James Northup, Oliver's son, described how the news of the murders destroyed the happiness of his granddaughter's birth, causing anxiety and insomnia for a large portion of his family as a reoccurrence of ALS that had been previously in remission. Peggy presented the judge with a collage of family images and stated, quote, "What one man's own six children represent, all of these people lost a person that they counted on," end quote. Daniel has claimed that in prison, he has changed for the better, and he deserves another opportunity. He said, quote, "I came to realize that there is no such thing as evil people in this world, only damaged people," end quote. That quote sounds straight out of a movie. I'm not even gonna lie to you. My thoughts on this case? I don't understand how none of this was taken seriously. I mean, Daniel was not hiding these thoughts. And there's always this common theme in cases where it's like, we can't do anything about it because this person hasn't committed a crime yet. But when the crime is committed, they ask themselves, how did we miss the warning signs, and how can we prevent this from happening again? It's sad and tragic that Tony, the grandson, would go on to take his own life after being accused of murdering his grandparents. No one wants to be wrongfully accused of anything, much less murder. That does something to a person. And it's so sad. So many people got hurt in this case. Daniel also tattooed the victim's wounds on himself, so clearly he shows no remorse. He knew exactly what he was doing. He has always known what he was doing, and he has known what he wanted to do since he was 10 years old. My heart goes out to the family because they endured so much pain and loss that they shouldn't have experienced because of a little boy with demonic thoughts that wanted to live out his fantasies. I am glad that Daniel's friend and his ex-girlfriend went to the police with this information because not all the time that happens. And seeing as there was no DNA or footprints or fingerprints at the scene, this case might have gone unsolved, and Daniel would go on to commit many more murders if they didn't tell the police. And with that, today's story comes to an end. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Remember, every Thursday there is a new episode. You can keep up with me and the podcast at Instagram at Criminal Curiosity Pod. That is all that I have for you today. Please be safe out there. Look out for one another. Until next time, bye everyone.